Well, here we are at the Counselor's Cafe again on this rainy Monday morning as I try to get things sorted out here. Okay. Good morning. This is where we focus on the care and feeding of the mind, the psyche, the spirit, whatever it is that makes us human, conscious of self, capable of change, and free to make choices. A little psychology, a little philosophy, and maybe a little bit of something else, which is what we're going to be talking about this morning. Although, you know, it involves psychology and philosophy too, but this morning we're going to be having a conversation with Paul Nagy, who is host of Touchstones here at WCOM on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. And we're going to be talking about psychic events, real or delusional, and people's reactions to them. But before that, I want to invite you to join in the discussion with any questions or comments you may have by calling 929-9601. And you could call in and let us know how you feel about the psychic in our lives and what kind of experiences you may have had in that realm. If you can't call right now, you can always get in touch later by emailing counselorscafe@nc.rr.com or by writing to Counselor, Box 6, 200 West Weaver Street, Carborough. Let me know what it is you'd like to talk about. And while I talk about getting in touch, check out WCOM's website at www.communityradio.coop. To take our listener survey, you'll see the little feedback box there. Let us know what you want your community radio to be. Also, check on the program schedule. See all the great shows that we have. You can even check on the West End Report and find an email address that asks you to send us your local news for our weeknight WCOM news program. Rainy weather has me a little bit slow this morning. I've got to pick it up a little. Okay. Let's pick it up a little bit with some jazz at Lincoln Center. Wynton Marsalis. They came to swing. Thank you. okay, we're going to get off the eight train right now and start our conversation. Paul, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Yeah, it was nice, feeling this nice, wonderful, cool rain out there. It's real rain, though. It's not doesn't erase the drought, folks, but at least
it helps
making a little drop in the bucket.
Right, and it's nice that we actually have some springtime without going immediately into 80-degree weather.
That's true.
Yeah,
difficult with people like me who will not splurge for air conditioning in their cars.
Uh-huh,
it's rough.
Uh-huh. Right. When the weather gets hot.
Yes,
well, you can
is.
Always open the windows.
Well, that's a right. That only works if you're moving.
Well, I don't know. How often do you just go out and sit in your car?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I don't have to, right?
Yeah. We're going to talk about psychic events today and what is psychic. And I thought, well, let's just give ourselves a definition to start with so we can jump off from that. And according to the online Merriam-Webster dictionary, psychic is from the Greek psychikos, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, which means of the soul, from psyche, soul. It's also related to mind. And it says, lying outside the sphere of physical science or knowledge. Immaterial, moral, or spiritual in origin or force. Sensitive to non-physical or supernatural forces and influences. Marked by extraordinary or mysterious sensitivity, perception, or understanding. And then the encyclopedia goes on to say that there are cognitive parapsychological phenomena and their physical parapsychological phenomena. So that's kind of our ballpark today, is where we are going for it. And I thought, well, we could start with some stories.
Yeah, stories are always good. I wanted to say that most people I know who are psychic, that I know, that I've met in the last few years, and even these include even some of the religious people that I get on my show, Touchstones, are not strong advocators of the supernatural, meaning that, in other words, rather there's a sense of the integrity of reality, that what the real is, being the physical, has an integral continuum to the mental and the spiritual, that they're on a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
So the dualism that's implied in the Merriam dictionary, though for general sense makes sense, most psychics argue explicitly for, not all, but many would argue for a continuum. And the continuum, you could see like vibration.
Okay.
You know, in music, you know, and if you realize that since atoms are moving and a movement is a kind of vibration at various different rates, and they can, and there's a constellation or a figuration of various levels of vibration, you know, you have the lower vibrations, which is the physical world, and the intermediate vibrations, which is our electrical, dynamical, electronic world. And then we have other variations of the intermediate world, which would be our psychological, emotional, and living worlds, with the sense of inner space. And then, of course, we could presume that we can continue along this continuum to more and more refined versions of movement.
Right. So basically, it is that there is nothing that is supernatural, for the simple reason that everything that occurs in the omniverse is natural.
Because it happens, you know. Mm-hmm. But it what it may be is that obviously you can't necessarily explain angels by nuclear physics.
Right.
I mean,
well,
although we know there are people who think they can. But that doesn't necessarily mean that angels don't represent some aspect of this intermediate world, which is very vast in some ways. I mean, there's no doubt about it. In terms of, you know, it's sort of like the only thing you can be certain of is change. Mm-hmm. And change is changing all the time. Mm-hmm. And change is changing at various rates all the time. And it's sort of like it may be that the physical world is playing catch up with the mental world, or the mm-hmm. the mental world is pulling along the physical world.
Well, you get into, I mean, there are so many levels that we can go off in on this, because there are people who, unless they can see it and measure it and quantify it, then it doesn't exist. And I think that's where you get one group of people who will react to tales of, or relay people relating events that occur to them that can't be explained in this way. So they say then that they don't exist. It's impossible because they can't quantify it. They can't replicate it.
Well, just a few years ago, back in the 60s even, there were scientists, even in the 70s, there were scientists mm-hmm. who said that consciousness didn't exist because we have no way of measuring it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of silly, because they were probably conscious when they said that. And the, you know, but, you know, now, of course, we have instruments that do record changes in the physical brain. So now we claim that, well, we are beginning to record at least some of the understructure physiological events that, you know, represent consciousness. And that certain cognitive, emotional things that we do, you know, light up different parts of our brains. And so all of a sudden now, oh, that exists. So it didn't exist before we had the machine that gave us this structure. So there's this kind of objective loop back that mm-hmm. people want. And the same way with the sense of controlled experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
Or a double-blind theory, all of which, by the way, I have no problem with scientific method. I think it's ingenious and it's wonderful. But one of the definitely psychic phenomena sort of exists in the woods, but not in the zoo.
Okay, you know,
I haven't captured it, and they probably won't. I don't think it'll be one of them critters that if you get it in the zoo, it won't last long.
Right. Well, they say that magic is science we just haven't figured out yet.
Yes. Yeah. So magic is science that won't be caught.
Right. It's the unicorn.
Yeah.
Well, I thought we might talk about some stories, because I have one that's one of my favorite family tales. And also invite our listeners, if they've got any experiences with this type of event in their lives. And this goes back to my grandmother, who was an immigrant from Norway. And during the Second World War, of all things, was a streetcar conductor in New York City. Her son, my uncle, was in Europe in the war. He was a motorcycle dispatch rider. She saw him get on the streetcar in his uniform and look at her and say, "It's okay, Mom, I'm all right." And that was it. And the next day, they got a notice from the War Department, or whoever they get notices from, that he had been wounded in action. Now, you know, we talk about things like chaos theory and the interconnectedness of everything. I accept this story. I mean, my family is not generally delusional, at least not in this form. But I could work on an explanation that has some sort of physical basis to it. When you talk about, I mean, Einstein talked about spooky action at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
If you just fool with some little molecule or electron here, it could affect one.
A mother is connected to her children,
mm-hmm.
you know, and she's connected to her children always. And this includes her living and her dead children.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, she doesn't disconnect even with the children that don't survive.
Right.
They remain a part of her,
mm-hmm.
her experience, of her lived experience. And I think actually the best interesting place to observe psychic phenomena is in the wild. And what is the wild? The wild is our natural context of our life, our lived experience.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So in this case, the wild is your aunt's, right,
my,
it was your grandmother. Your grandmother's, you know, it was her life.
Right.
And it was her, you know, natural alarm that she was concerned with her children that might be in harm's way. So there was, this is a, you know, so she basically had like a, she was at a high threshold level about that kid in particular.
Right.
Or any
concerned
of her children.
About him particularly.
Because
he was over there in the war.
Yeah, exactly. So that would
be, she was tuned in.
Yeah, and that could be true of anything. So these that's one of the reasons why these stories are probably relatively common. I don't think of that as a unique story. I've heard variations of it from people over
the years.
Except
that people will say that, you know, what do people
dismissive.
Say to counter that?
Yeah, well, you don't. It's because it's a, you know, it's in the lived context of one's life.
Right.
It's also extraordinary. I mean, we wouldn't necessarily go around and, you know, systematically wound children with their mothers off in another city someplace saying, well, do you feel anything now? Do you feel anything now?
I hope not. Good grief.
Yeah. Are you sure you're not feeling anything now? I mean,
what
let's
idea.
Get off it.
Yes.
Well, you know, but I'm right, sure there are probably some draconian researchers over there that would probably like go back to the good old days. Of, so there's this natural context in which psychic phenomena occurs. Probably one of the contexts, though it may not be. I don't think any of them are determining contexts.
Mm-hmm.
But for instance, one of saying, well, I'm open to psychic phenomena, I'm open to need to be sensitive to these types of things to occur, might make it easier for you to notice them than when they don't occur. Like just before this show, I was telling you about my show from a couple of weeks ago, which didn't get recorded. I had on this show a well-known psychic, and we had a lot of fun, and it was a good recording. It was a good show. And one of the things we talked about was the dream I'd had, and in the very beginning of the dream was I was with some movie people, and we were going to shoot this scene. In fact, we were shooting, the whole issue was having this gun I was going to shoot, and wondering where the gun was. It was on a swimming pool. And but the very beginning of the dream was where's the film people? This was supposed to be filmed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened is that show didn't get recorded because I sabotaged myself by basically pushing a wrong button, which I haven't done for months. I mean, I pretty much know how to record these shows now on this computer system, but I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, gee whiz, that's consistent with my dream.
yes.
Now, but that's not a psychic event because, you know, that just shows you that I'm neurotic and suggestible and I allow my dreams to determine my life. See, so I can't, but again, in the context of living, that's a quasi-psychic event.
Mm-hmm,
in other
mm-hmm.
words, you could say it sort of predicted I wasn't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't consciously or deliberately not record the event to be in consonance with the dream. But when I noticed that it happened and the recording was the thing, I was like, gee, well, that's interesting. It's very similar to what was going on in that dream, as were other things. But
now,
that's
you'd look
an
at
example.
It sometime to try to look at the way things might be explained is one, perhaps, being concerned or wanting this recording to occur the way it ought to, because you thought this would be a good show.
Right.
So getting yourself into some sort of a state and then having a dream that kind of warned you to check on how it was being recorded.
Yeah.
Because you were anxious about it.
Yeah.
And that anxiety made you mess up anyway, so you didn't take the warning.
Yeah, as far as I know, actually, the recording, I had recorded the show correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't save it correctly.
Right.
So,
right.
But be that as whatever it may.
Yeah.
That's the kind of things that one may occur all the time. Precognitive dreams or snippets of dreams that tell you about things that are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, these can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may have a precognitive dream that a good friend of yours is going away and ain't mm-hmm. coming back, and mm-hmm. you're saying goodbye. And then, you know, the next day or a day or two mm-hmm. later, you discover that so-and-so has died.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. It didn't necessarily mean that you dreamed when he died. But there was something in your larger sense of self that, mm-hmm. that was preparing you for this loss and transition. I've had experiences like that, actually.
Well, it almost ties in with the mother and child thing, in that you were close to a friend and sensing something that was going on with that friend, whether they even knew it. And I guess I'd stop myself there and say, okay, how did that person die? Did they die from some internal disorder, or did they die by getting hit by a car? Which, I mean, one would be difficult to sense. I mean, if you were sensing something from your friend because of your connection, you might tune in to a physical condition they were in. But how would you be able to sense if they just got hit by a car? So that's...
Well, yeah, but that kind of determination
mm-hmm.
is a determination based on our common sense version of reality.
Right.
That assumes that accidents are really accidents, and that cancerous growths are something that one might intuitively sense over mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. or
right.
whatever,
right.
and in my particular case, I'm sure that what it was my friend worked himself to death and drowned in his bathtub out of exhaustion because his autonomic nervous system wouldn't wake him up when he started to drown. So, and that's pretty intense. But it was certainly not sudden. People mm-hmm. have been telling them for years. Unfortunately, wouldn't listen to me because my entire approach to reality was take it easy. Well, you shouldn't be working hard for anybody, not even yourself.
Right.
You know, take your vacations, take uh-huh. time off, relax. What uh-huh. the hell, you know? Just be a time server. Stop trying to stop trying to excel in a system which is basically set up in a way to make you fail, which
mm-hmm.
is the post office in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
But let's put this. If we continue with the idea of a natural of that where psychic phenomena occurs in our life, is within our own network of meaning and significance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what we pay attention to and what we're not quite paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what matters to us and what we care about, you know, and these are what may determine our sensitivity to things.
Okay.
And everybody does that. I think we're very, very, we're very fine-tuned instruments. And there's a whole, you know, it's sort of like this radio station, except more complex. It's sort of like there are 15 ways that we can modulate the volume,
mm-hmm.
of the broadcast that's going here. Well, in the same way, we've got, you know, 70 ways, some of which are, we come in genetically,
mm-hmm.
some of which come in that happen during our developmental stages. You know, their knobs that become activated.
You're
that
kind of
gets
talking
set
about us as receivers.
Yeah, receivers and senders.
Okay,
because
right.
what we're doing is we're taking these various sensitivities and we're setting them.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the dials get set really young.
Mm-hmm.
like, you know, there's the good enough mother sensor, right? Mm-hmm. Whether when I yell, is somebody going to come, right?
Right.
And when I learned that nobody's going to come when I yell, then I set this expectation. Now, that made expectation, I might set that dial and not be able to tune it very much mm-hmm. either way for the rest of my life,
mm-hmm.
So that I'm always going to have, if my expectation is, mama didn't come that quick, mm-hmm. my entire life is going to be not, everything isn't going to be quite when it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is going to be off time.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be my interior sense of color everything else that I do, in terms of success, in terms of love, in terms of mm-hmm. passion, in terms of everything. Everything is not quite what it could be. It's
mm-hmm.
always, it's in other words, it wasn't when it should have been,
mm-hmm.
Not because it isn't, but because
you're not
I've got
to it.
This, I've got this set nozzle someplace, mm-hmm. which I may or may not be able to get back to change.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we've got a whole bunch of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So as senders and receivers, we're really, really delicate instruments. We're much more than our five senses. It's sort of like all of our five senses have five senses.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
mm-hmm.
everything multiplies. Sight. Yes, sight has hearing, taste, touch,
mm-hmm.
and smell connected mm-hmm. to it. And smell has seeing mm-hmm. and hearing. And taste,
mm-hmm.
feeling.
It makes me start thinking about some readings I've done and people I've talked with in connection with creativity, taken to the nth degree, leading to schizophrenia. Basically, because creativity. Or the artist can be very sensitive to their surroundings. They see what the average person who is maybe has their nozzles turned differently is not going to notice. I mean, they'll see the way the light hits a leaf on a tree or something and turn
yeah.
this into art. But
yes.
if that goes to the extreme where your sensitivities are so, so sensitive... are so finely tuned, highly tuned, that you begin to receive more than you can accommodate. You get an overload. You get a sensory and psychic overload of your input. And then in order to translate that or into something understandable, you get a pattern or a system of trying to work with this that is not conducive to functioning in our society.
Yeah, I mean the analogy of creativity and schizophrenia is one that's long and hoary
mm-hmm.
and goes
mm-hmm.
goes well back into the 1920s
right.
and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
However, what we know psychophysiologically about mm-hmm. schizophrenia now holds up to a degree. But one of the things that we see, and again, this is from the brain scans
mm-hmm.
with schizophrenics. And I am obviously not an authority in any way, shape, or form in any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a know-it-all who knows nothing. And but one of the things that they have begun to show is that in some ways for schizophrenia, they don't have a way of discriminating inner and outer in a way
right.
When it gets to this overflight, yeah, it's not modulatable,
mm-hmm.
and it sometimes it can become very things and certain aspects. So it's sort of like it's not so much that they're so fine tuned
mm-hmm.
as their instrumentation panel is cross wired,
mm-hmm. okay.
And yeah, so when you think you're adjusting certain things, those adjustments don't place, or they're more loosely wired,
mm-hmm.
because it may be true that at the root essence of all of us, without our needing to do anything, there is no difference between any of us because we're all part of the great vibration.
Mm-hmm.
See, However, on the everyday world, you know, I'm me and you, Euro, and there ain't no... And if we touch hands, we aren't going to necessarily blend into one, you know...
That's right. This is
gigantic
not, we don't,
gob.
We can't do the mind meld either.
we don't do the physical... We try to do the physical meld, and I'm sure it's a lot of fun for a while.
Uh-huh.
But then it's kind of nice to be able to take a shower by yourself.
Yeah. I was thinking of Spock, with the mind meld.
Yes. Right. Well, you know, we do have this situation. You know, one of the wonderful natural experiments that people have attempted to do is parallel dreaming, which is where you get people to come get together and you have different suggestions that everybody agrees that, well, one, I want you to dream about X and Y and Z, and you make these, you know, three suggestions mm-hmm. that people hold into their dreams. I want you to try to dream about three things, you know, and usually so, and everybody is given the same assignment, and then you're asked, you know, to see who you're dreaming about,
mm-hmm.
and then everybody writes their dreams down, and they come together, and they try to see if there's any parallel dreaming. It doesn't mm-hmm. actually happen at the same time, but it may be that people are actually having very similar dreams.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing to do if you're like in a dream workshop
mm-hmm.
to request after everybody's gotten through the individualism of their dreams, they've gotten used to interpreting them to a degree. You can start playing around with some of these things. Well, we're gonna try parallel dreaming. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna take these three objects that people will choose. The group will choose together which ones they want to use. Mm-hmm. And then we're all going to suggest to ourselves to dream about them, record these dreams, and then see which of us share dreams.
Right.
With knowingly or unknowingly in another week or so.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating process.
Well, the whole notion of what's going on when we dream is fascinating, and Jung gets really into dream work. It's not something that I have studied that much. I mean, I've had maybe two strongly precognitive dreams, but in general, I don't even remember my dreams. I've spent a time, one period, because I read you can teach yourself to remember dreams. So I did this for a while. And it's have your paper and pencil right there by the side of the bed. So the second you become aware, you write down whatever it is you're thinking of or you're dreaming. And I could train myself so I had more awareness of what was in my head when I woke up. But I gave it up after a while because it wasn't very interesting. I was like, I don't know what these dreams mean. I'm walking down a street with my mother, and there's a city street, and nothing particular is happening, and I don't know, other things.
To be fair and realistic, fair about that, people who are good at self-motivated to remember their dreams and keep dream journals tend to be more introverted and working mm-hmm. on their self-stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
I do much better in remembering dreams when somebody says to me, like, oh, we're going to have a show next tomorrow, and I want you to tell me a dream. I'm extroverted enough that I won't remember dreams for months on end. You know, right. I'm not saying I don't have them. I just not remember them.
Right, right.
And but that day, you know, I'm going to please that guest and definitely have a dream to remember.
Right,
you know?
Right.
If anybody wants to see a funny example of that, you should tune into my interview that I had on my show with Tom Lane,
uh-huh.
and who is a dream, does dream work and dream analysis, is mm-hmm. quite taken with this stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, so not only that, but I did my typical overkill
uh-huh.
With him, because I didn't have just a dream to give him. Actually, I had two dreams, but I had a dream to give him, and then I had a big dream,
uh-huh.
you know, which are those, you know, which is when you dream that you're dreaming,
uh-huh.
so
uh-huh.
you know that you're dreaming. And in my big dream, I had somebody start talking to me about Well, it started. It was a funny dream because it starts out with me making love to four women at the same time. Now that is definitely a dream. One I liked, by the way, but I can't imagine that happening in real life. Uh-huh. But it was definitely wonderful mm-hmm. in this dream that Scott's got it. What started? So eventually, what happens is some of these people we are come in and say, "Well, we're going to Herquela." Herquela is a dream city that's mentioned uh-huh. in the Persian literature on dreaming.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of the capital city. It's the Washington, D.C. of dreams, people.
Okay, you know? Okay.
It's the capital of dreams. You know, it's where, you know, and so I went to Herquela. So uh-huh. I got on this little boat and we went over this river and over this water and off to this big city of Herquela, which is this big dream capital. And of course, I'd heard of it, you know.
Right.
And though I couldn't remember at the time, I was telling Tom the name of Herquela. I went home and looked up my book and found the name of the place, and it was the one that was used in the dream, I'm pretty sure. But but what happened is, you know, then we talked about, you know, what dreaming is. Now, dreaming actually is a good locus for the natural world of psychic phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of psychic stuff happens that's related to dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And sensitivity to dreaming is probably the best thing you can do to prime yourself to become psychic. There are other ways to prime mm-hmm. yourself to become psychic. And in fact, it actually might be interesting to look at some of the ways that psychics teach other psychics to be psychic.
In other words, they say that it is... A skill we all have, or it's an ability
that can be developed. Yeah, and it's
that can be developed.
And it's a little counterintuitive to the skills that we value in our professional lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In other words, what we value in our professional lives is the ability to discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good word. It means to figure that the values of different things.
Mm-hmm.
To analyze, to hold a lot of information and to maintain their discrete identities,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right? And through various naming and categorizing, analyzing a logical consistency and being self-reflexive in that logical mm-hmm. consistency. All of these are skills that are untaught
mm-hmm.
in your psychic stuff. What do they do when they teach you to be psychic? Well, one of the ways that it's approached is they suggest that you one relax and you go into a consciously relaxed state, so that you're not doing any of the reflexive mm-hmm. things that we value in our mm-hmm. professional conscious lives, and then you are told to accept and say the first thing that comes into your mm-hmm. mouth, whatever it is. And whatever it is, all the people around you or your teacher, or depending on the context is taking place, is going to verify and say, yes, this is right. If you say red, they're going to say, yes, I was angry right then. If you say blue, they say, yes, I was kind of feeling depressed. Right. No matter what you say that comes into your mind, they're going to claim.
Affirm it.
They're going to affirm it and its significance.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say, well, that's cheating because maybe it ain't true. But mm-hmm. it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. What they're teaching you to do is to trust your tangential perceptions,
mm-hmm.
which are, in terms of those knobs that we're talking about in that mm-hmm. incredible sensitivity sense,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole bunch of perceptive apparati which we haven't paid any attention to
mm-hmm.
that are sending us signals that we have learned not to pay attention to.
Right.
And becoming psychic is becoming sensitive to some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't, those apparati are tuned in ways that our common sense world doesn't even say that the world exists. So they can mm-hmm. be sensitive to things that are not in a sequential ordering, so that things could be happening in the future and the past you know, but in a way that is differently organized than what we would put together. And so usually what psychics do, and I think that some psychics become aware of several of these knobs and become aware of what those messages mean for them.
Right.
This is why one color, that's, you know, red, doesn't mean mad to everybody or passion
right.
to everybody.
Right.
I mean, it's a cultural norm, but so it is if one of the ways you pick up your subliminal influences might be through color, the meaning of the color palette you're going to develop for yourself. And I think some of the best training methods for psychic stuff, they, instead of giving you one palette that you conform to, suggest that you find the innerly
right.
how the colors mean to you.
I want to jump in and talk about you becoming affirmed. You are learning to how to trust your own, what did you call it, tangential impulses.
Impulses, yeah.
And so then you become more confident. And the more confident you become, the more you believe in it. The more you believe in it, could you say, the more you create it?
Well,
so
no, then you See, no. I disagree with this. But belief is an overused word here.
Well, throw in here the physicists who say when you look at something one way, it's a stable thing, and you look at it another way,
it's a wave.
Yeah. So the way you perceive the world influences how you behave, and that influences how the world reacts.
Yeah, but again, here's where you've overstated it.
Okay.
The way you've overstated it is what you're learning to do is to recognize, to value aspects of your sensory apparatus.
Mm-hmm.
We're not saying extrasensory apparatus,
right,
folks.
Right.
We're saying that your sensory apparatus is much more highly attuned to reality than we are,
mm-hmm.
than our social historical circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in a kind of, you know, checkerboard world where if you knock down the dominoes, everything clicks in place and falls over, which in the world is more intricately arranged than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, if instead of knocking over the dominoes, they bounce all around. You know, I mean, it's the world, as I said, is the sensory apparatus is more sense. What you're learning is not believing that, mm-hmm. though that the belief helps, but what you're actually looking for is a positive affirmation that allows you to value.
Mm-hmm.
And value doesn't necessarily mean believe in.
Right.
In other words, you don't have to completely throw out your critical facilities.
Good.
Here. You know,
it
what
can
you're
happen,
doing
though.
Is, you're, yeah, it can happen. But, you know, we're not training schizophrenics. We're training, right. Empaths.
Well,
we're training people who are... who are psychics, you know, who are learning to use more.
We're not training demigods or anything.
Yeah, we're
like learning.
Yeah, or learning to become aware of subliminal aspects of their perceptive apparatus, which for whatever reasons they're unconscious to,
mm-hmm.
or this it's just outside of their consciousness. You know, there's a word for that. Quasi consciousness of this thing. So the way you get this little will o' the wisp, you know, that's like, you know, like one of the ways that they teach psychic phenomena is to, you know, pay attention to your peripheral vision.
Mm-hmm.
That where
mm-hmm.
you're going to see ghosts is not looking straight on at them,
mm-hmm.
but they're all going to be floating around just outside, just beyond where you can see. So you want to extend your peripheral vision. See,
you know, this I just finished reading a book by Alan Lightman this year, this week, called Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan is a theoretical physicist, I believe, and he wrote Einstein's Dreams,
mm-hmm.
which is a great little book. Anyway, the character in the book sees something out of the corner of his eye. He's working in a mortuary, and it is some sort of energy form that he sees either coming out of or going into a dead body that for a few seconds looks at him.
Right.
And
that captures him in a way.
And captures him. And, yes, and then the whole story goes on from there.
That's a classic folklore motif.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But the theory of the, or not the theory, but the theme of the book is really what happens to him after this as he doubts himself, he believes that he saw it, what his friends think, what the university thinks, what some parapsychological organization thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the whole different approach of people in our worlds as they look at this one little, you know, maybe 30 second, I don't know if I even remember the timing of it, event in this man's life.
Right.
It's...
Well, and in some ways, this is kind of what we're saying with this with developing psychic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in their life has at one time or another seen ghosts, had visions, and things. I mean, but the thing is that they're extraordinary. They don't happen every day to everybody. There are people around who claim it happened to them all the time or happened to them with great frequency.
Mm-hmm.
However, most of those people, with maybe, again, some exceptions, because for people in their personal developmental world, for instance, a child who, for whatever reasons, for themselves, for their own pleasure or stimulus, may develop an elaborate orientations to their dreams and to mm-hmm. remembering their dreams and interacting in their dreams. This is something that they're going to develop on their own, for themselves and in themselves, and they may or may not bridge that dream world activity and bring it into when they go through the stronger socializations of adolescence. They may bring that over and continue it, and if they do, they'll probably be what you would call a natural psychic.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if we discussed in enough depth with the people around who are psychics, claim to be psychic, who are psychic counselors, that what they had done is through various experiences in themselves, unconsciously or otherwise, were staying sensitive to some of these apparatus that we aren't necessarily paying attention to.
Well, I think also of the invisible friends that mm-hmm. children have.
Yes.
Not all children, of course, but, you know, what exactly is that? They really have a friend. Maybe there's something really there that we just can't see, because we've tuned it out.
Yeah.
It's
Well, one of the books I was going to suggest is, I don't remember the title of it now, but it's by Stanley Googe. That's a great name, Googe. Googe.
Uh-huh.
Stan Googe is a psychophysiologist.
Uh-huh.
London-based.
He's a physiologist who's psycho, or he's...
Well, if you read his book, you probably would think so. But what he did is he wrote a book claiming that that a lot of the voices we hear is our cerebrum talking to our cerebellum. That it's what we have is it's called the midbrain. It's a kind of little brain that our other brain sort of goes around. And the two brains are like slightly autonomous with one another.
I have a book at home called The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind.
Right. Well, he does Julian James's work, which was done about 30 years ago now. It was, mm-hmm. came out in the mid-70s. His dealt more with the hemisphericity. And that's interesting in itself. But one of the things that he did emphasize is this interesting double brain theory, mm-hmm. which is, you know, because they both the midbrain and the outer brain, mm-hmm. the cerebrum, are both part of the hemisphericity, mm-hmm. thing. They both have like little walnuts. People, that's what our brains are like, little walnuts.
Well, they're also working now on what they have discovered, and I don't remember exactly when they discovered it, but there's brain tissue in the heart. so that the idea being that we also do think with our hearts, which is, you know, so many of the things that come out in science are things that people have lived in their lives forever. They just called it other things.
People don't. Well, actually, one of the things they'll probably discover is that our whole body is part of the brain network. You know, and definitely the chakras tell us where to look for the recurring things. But yeah, actually, people have known about thinking with the heart for a long time.
Right.
You know, but I guess it took a physiologist to find cells that were similar to the brain.
Exactly. That's what they found.
You know, but it also shows that, you know, learning how to think with the heart, which is one of the things that people do to become more psychic. And we could have taken that in another direction. But maybe in another show, we will continue to explore what it would be to be psychic.
And I recommend people that that people take a little bit of look at the theoretical physicists out there, because physics today is really, at least one branch of it, a very exciting realm. Very imaginative. It seems to be connecting with Eastern philosophy and bringing it into modern science. Anyway, I recommend people that they pay attention to the physicists today.
Yeah, and I would recommend that you pay attention to your own perceptions and realize that your own thoughts and feelings probably carry a bigger whop of valid information than we sometimes know, and that a lot of the ways that we habituate ourselves to thinking and doing things over and over again in a habitual way is blocking us from our own sensitivities. And that the extrasensory of the psychic is really only a way of becoming more sensitive to who we really are.
And again, as you said earlier, it's a continuum, and learning how to be aware, but being able to control that awareness so that we don't get swamped by it. This has been great. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. We can surely talk about this some more.
Yeah,
we
haven't even got started on how to become psychic.
Right. We could have a training session sometime.
Yeah. Well, I'll take a few courses, but yeah.
All right. This has been the Counselor's Cafe on this rainy Monday morning. Nice to have the water coming down and going into our reservoirs. And again, that doesn't mean you can stop conserving water. You can't. We're not full yet by any means. I think we're up to 60% capacity. I'm not sure my recent checking on it.
That's not enough to fill up our swimming pools.
No. So we're still on our third stage conservation. Thanks so much for tuning in, and come back again next week to the Counselor's Cafe. And remember that you can listen some more to Paul tomorrow at 11 a.m. for Touchstones.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to be having a couple of men on from the men's movement, and we can discover whether the men's movement is really an aide-de-camp to feminism, or is it really just a last gasp of the patriarchy?
Wow. Listen up. Bye-bye.